Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, December 14th, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Raw Contact, and the president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I will be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try and keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Jim McCarty and not Carla tonight because Carla's got a bit of a flu bug. Jim, how's Carla feeling today?
She's doing a little better. She's moved up from eating only applesauce to doing a little baked potato with butter and some corn. And she's starting to work her puzzles again and do a little computer work, maybe doing some solitaire. So that's better than just lying in bed and enduring the upset stomach and the sore throat, congested chest, and the headache, and the other symptoms that go with this. Yeah. But she is doing better.
Okay. Well, just let her know we're all praying for her, as we always are, but especially right now, because I know that's not fun to go through that. So we sure hope she feels better soon.
Well, thank you. We appreciate all the prayers, and we know they help.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, did you have anything you'd like to talk about before we get started?
Well, the big news in my week was that yesterday was my last full day of working Jim's lawn service. I'm now officially retired.
Woohoo!
And that will give me more time to spend with Carla to take care of her. And back into the L&L office, Gary's going to start shipping me over some emails that I can respond to and do like I used to do over 11 years ago before I started Jim's Lawn Service. And there's always work to do in our yard and garden, so I'm still going to be plenty busy, but it's going to be like the good old days.
All right.
Yes.
Well, that sounds great.
I'm excited
that
about
sounds-
it.
Well, good deal.
And then I guess
okay.
The other thing I wanted to mention, we were talking some before the show about the tragic events in Connecticut that occurred today at the elementary school, and how it's another example of a deranged gunman on the loose for reasons no sane person could ever understand, and wreaking such devastation. And I guess, like most people, my initial response was just horror, and then the disbelief and grief for the children and for the families. And we've seen this so much. This past summer in Colorado, that the Dark Knight movie theater massacre by this fellow with orange hair who wanted to be the Joker, it just keeps happening. And not just in this country. The fellow in Belgium this past year was quite effective in killing 57 people because he felt he was cleansing the world of Muslims. I could be wrong, and I don't think. I'd just like to give my opinion about what might be going on. I see a connection here between the ending of the old age that's being talked about so much now with the Mayan prophecy. being an age of male domination, basically, the male energy, Ra described as that which reaches, and female energy is that which awaits the reaching. So from there, you kind of have to imagine what would happen if the male energy, for example, got out of balance with the female energy, which I think has happened pretty clearly. I mean, most people around the world are aware of far fewer opportunities for women in business, in society in general, than there are for men. The pay is always lower. There's the so-called glass ceiling that women can't go beyond when they get into the corporate world. And just in every possible way, I mean, Muslim girls in many countries that are more fundamental in the Muslim traditions don't usually get education. They have to be taught by somebody on the side if they're ever going to learn to read or to write. And that's an extreme example, but it's so common around the world in almost every country to see how the male energy has asserted itself in such a way as to be pretty much out of balance and in many cases out of control. And I think when we see something like this, the shooting in Connecticut or Colorado or Belgium, we're seeing the worst of what male energy has to offer, that when it's gone beyond all bounds, that when it's been supported enough that it can go beyond all bounds and be uncontrollable almost, this is something that lets us know that we're in a type of mental framework and social conditioning that isn't at all balanced or fair or that which can help the entire society, the entire population of the planet move forward as a culture into the fourth density of love and understanding. There's, you know, the time of choice is now, and I think that the Mayan prophecy and the change that supposedly will be coming a week from tonight, or this morning, is a change that has been moving for some time, where the feminine energy, that which awaits the reaching, is being activated, and it's alive. It's in every human being, and whether you're biologically male or female. And this energy is a very nurturing energy. It's inspirational. Ra said in the sexual energy exchange that what the male has to give in abundance is the physical energy. And I think this physical energy is one of the ways that the male is used to be in control and to dominate over the years, thousands of years of societies around the world. And the feminine energy then is that which awaits the reaching. And now this energy is beginning to find a pathway to expression. And there is a slow but sure improvement for the condition of many women in many countries, particularly in the West. But still, we see there's a great distance to go. And I think that this energy is going to continue to express itself until there is more of a feeling of working from the heart, not so much from the head, a balance between the two, of the rational application of the mind and the intuitional opening of the heart, and beginning to share the love, the unconditional love that is there, the mother's love, the nurturing love, the fathering love, this love for the infant that is our planet, that is ourselves, as we begin to move into this new age. So at that point,
so are you?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to, you know, when you and I communicated this week about an opening riff, I said, well, I don't really have much to say as far as an opening riff goes. And here I just chatted on for who knows how long. But go ahead. I'm through now.
Well, and that's not to mention, you know, the ongoing wars and drone strikes and obviously, you know, all the violence in general. You know, when something like this happens, it kind of brings it, you know, to the mainstream, and everybody's, oh my God, what just happened? But yet, you know, there's so much violence, you know, still going on. So are you saying that the response to that over, or rather unbalanced male energy is to respond with love and be in the heart? Is that what we can do to try to balance society?
In general, I think that's what we can do, for the entire planet, for our society, for ourselves, and for our loved ones, is to, you know, the old dictum, physician, first heal thyself. we need to continue this work that we're all doing as seekers of truth and continue to look at our experiences and our daily round of activities, those things that pop up spontaneously, that we maybe aren't so thrilled about how we responded. And look at a way that maybe would have had more love in it. And just think about what we're doing. Contemplate on it. Meditate on it. Pray about it. Whatever your way to the Creator is, you know, travel that path more frequently and see what you can do, see what we can all do to open ourselves in love. I think that this is something, I think that we're going to be saved by the, as Ross said, the striking of the clock, as if, you know, the hour has come, because I think this beginning emergence of the feminine energy is something that is going to happen, really whether we want it to or not. And if we can cooperate with it and accentuate it in ourselves and in those about us, then we will be giving energy and attention and opportunity to the ability of this feminine energy to balance ourselves and balance our world and begin to find that type of peace within ourselves that doesn't have to strike out against anyone, that doesn't have to control anyone in order to feel like it's an essential, vital, living animal. I think that we can do it another way, and it's a far more balanced way. And I think that what we're learning from so many thousands of years of male domination is that, well, there's got to be another way, because this just isn't working for everybody. And look, we're all portions of the Creator, and if there's any portion being left out, then we need to look and see why. And I think that it's been fairly obvious for a long time that the male domination of all cultures is it's run its course, and it's done all it can do, and it's threatening to destroy us.
Yeah. Well, being that it's a week before the big day, I know a lot of our listeners are probably wondering, are they going to talk about 2012 and the Mayan calendar and all that? And you mentioned it briefly, and I just want to say to our listeners, yes, we will. We've got a couple of questions lined up on that very topic. But for now, leading into that, and we do have a selection we're going to read from Kuo about that very topic as well, so hang on. But getting back to this act of violence that just happened and what you were just saying about being, responding in love, that brings up a question. I'm going to go ahead and go into that question since we're on that topic. Now, this is just something that's kind of a composite question from the Bring Forth Forum. And that is, you know, you mentioned praying and, of course, working on yourself and getting in touch with that darkness that's inside of ourselves, the parts of ourselves that would be violent, for example, and healing that. But we also tend, you know, when these things happen, you know, everybody starts praying, hopefully. That's a good thing. It's usually considered a good thing. What about praying for the perpetrator, for the shooter, for the people that are doing these acts of violence? And my understanding was that was a good thing too, because, you know, to respond in love. And of course, the great masters, you know, like Jesus said, to forgive your enemies and forgive 70 times 7 and all that. And yet, we also know from Ra that a truly STS entity doesn't particularly like getting love sent their way. It's kind of like, you know, them sending hatred or fear to us. You know, we don't like that. So being that most of these perpetrators probably aren't really necessarily polarized STS, some of them are just of mixed polarity and they're just very confused or very messed up, you know, had an abusive childhood, et cetera. We don't really know the difference by looking at them. We don't know, is this person truly an STS entity who would reject our gesture of love, or is it a person of mixed polarity who would welcome our gesture of love? So here's the question. Can sending love to such entities that are being violent, and we don't really know if they're truly negative or not, can that backfire? I'm referring to what some people call love bombs, i.e. doing a meditation or praying to lighten the dark areas of the planet, or even with the express intention of releasing, forgiving, and loving the negative elite, or just having the intention of sending love to negative entities in general. Can this actually result in retaliation from them, as in more acts of random violence? A member of the forum actually suggested that some of the people in the forum who were doing a meditation specifically sending love to negative entities might have actually indirectly caused this act of violence, backfired. What do you think about that?
First of all, no, I don't believe that's possible. The Confederation of Planets in the Service of the Infinite Creator is the group that we've always channeled over the years, and one of the things they do besides telepathic channeling, which is really a kind of a rare thing for them, the more common way of being of service to a planet like Earth is to send love and light to the entire planet, positive or negative entities that can choose, either consciously or subconsciously, to accept that or to reject it or to ignore it. It's a total free will thing, and I think that the intention behind the sending of love is what really determines what type of an action it is. If you're sending love to a negatively oriented entity in order to make that entity stop doing what it's doing, then that's conditional love, and that's probably not the most efficient way of doing it. Simply sending them love and light because they're a part of the Creator and not wishing any particular outcome other than to send them love and light because they're part of the Creator, makes that as effective an action of service as a service to other person can be to an entity that you don't know if they're negative or not, but even if they are, you're also sending them love and light because they are a part of the Creator. And I think that sending love and light to the perpetrator of this shooting, to anybody who's committed horrific and violent acts in the murder and mayhem, rape and all the things that can be done, maybe something that some people would find difficult because they feel like this person deserves punishment. But, you know, that's the old way. That's the Old Testament way, the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And I think Jesus came with a new covenant and a new testament because the old one wasn't working. And he said, love your enemies. If someone strikes you on the cheek, turn the other cheek and so forth. So, yeah, we need to be sending love and light to everybody, to recognize that everybody is a part of the Creator. And I think part of that can reflect back to ourselves where we see, you know, each of us has a shadow side, a way of expressing ourselves that maybe we wish we didn't do that, that it's something maybe we don't do very often or in public, something maybe overtakes us. There's a dark side because we really haven't accepted some portion of ourselves. We've made it a bad thing, a bad portion. It needs to be punished, this old punishment thing. So we can do this individually with ourselves by sending love and light to our total self, because we're part of the Creator too, to anybody, anywhere, for any time, any reason. I think love really is the answer. You know, the Beatles had it. A lot of people have had it, and they've been telling us about it for years. And I think finally more and more people are beginning to have this feeling that we need to be more sensitive to ourselves and everybody that we meet, that there's just there's so much chance for stress to overtake us, that we're fragile beings and we're in each other's care, and we need to be careful with each other. We need to be loving. And it starts right at home with ourselves, with our meditations, with our desire to seek each day, with the way we treat each other.
Excellent. That's very well said, Jim. Thank you. Now, more specifically, this question also came up in the course of that conversation. Someone had suggested that we actually do a meditation, and I actually thought it was a great idea, but a few people disagreed. And the meditation was specifically to send love and light to those that are currently in power, the negative elites or Illuminati or whatever you want to call them. And right now, at the end of this age, with so much happening, the intention of the meditation was not to change them, was not to send love like a love bomb and force them to change to STO. It was not anything of the sort. It was simply sending love and gratitude and appreciation because they too serve the Creator, and at the same time, fully accepting them in their chosen role and yet releasing them and letting them know that, hey, you know what, thank you for your service, but you can go now. Your time is up and we're going to go ahead and take it from here. And we have awakened and we're going to actually start having a different kind of planet. We're going to have we don't really need you to control everyone and start wars and stuff and all that stuff anymore. You can go ahead and be on your way. Thank you very much. Kind of like, you know, loving and accepting them and yet declining their service. So would you say that is in the category of unconditional love, or do you think that that could be a little too far in the gray area of maybe conditional?
Well, again, I think it goes back to the intention of the sending of the love and the light. If you do it because they are just a part of the Creator and you feel that they also deserve love and light, then I think it's an act well done. If you're hoping that they'll stop doing what they're doing because they got a little more love and light and can see better, that probably isn't going to happen, and it's probably not the most efficient way of sending love and light. It reminds me of back when Don was talking to Ra about this fifth density negative entity that was greeting our group from time to time, especially greeting Carla as the instrument, because she physically was the weakest and had the most distortions that could be accentuated and used to stop the Ra contact. At one point, Don kept asking Ra, well, what can we do to be of service to this negatively oriented entity? You know, if we know, if we knew more about what his desire was, maybe we could help him in some way to do something else and not bother Carla, was Don's basic point there. And Ra suggested really the only thing that this entity wanted was the death of the instrument, and would we see that as service? You know, Ra sort of asked us tongue-in-cheek, if they have a tongue-in-cheek, I guess. Well, of course, we didn't see that as service, but that didn't stop Don. We never really understood why Don went so far with trying to find out how we could serve this entity, but toward the end of what turned out in the book to be about 2 pages of Ra's responses to Don's questions in this area, Ra suggested that in this case there was the mutual offering of service, of the service to others' entity, to service to self, service to self, to service to others, and they were mutually rejected. And this was okay, so what we needed to do was to bless that entity, let it go on its way, and let ourselves do the same. So I sort of suggested to me that at some point, you know, after sending them love and light, then go on about your business with whatever else you're doing, because you've done whatever you can for this entity. They're probably going to just reject it or ignore it, because that's not their game. It's like we wouldn't want to do what they're doing, so they don't want to do what we're doing, so we just do what we do, and they do what they do. So somewhere in there, I hope there was an answer.
Absolutely, and that session, by the way, is 67.7. Uh-huh. That session that Jim just mentioned, you can, if anyone would like to pull that up, it's excellent, but it's about declining of that service. So that leads to the next question then. If we're doing a meditation specifically declining the service of the negative elite, do we have, you know, is it okay for us to do that? I mean, who are we to send love to the negative elite and decline their service on behalf of those who don't even know the negative elite exists? But I think about people like, you know, my niece and friends, you know, people that are, you know, not aware of all this stuff, but they're beautiful, good people, and you can see that they're polarizing STO. They're just lovely people, and yet they are being, to some degree or another, enslaved by the negative elite, whether it's the fluoride in the water or the, you know, the lies that the government tells and the, you know, the unending wars and all that stuff. You know, and I know that in the Christian church there's such a thing as intercessory prayer. You can pray on behalf of others. So wouldn't this sort of be in that category? Like maybe we're doing some intercessory prayer for these people that we know would choose to decline the offer of these negative entities?
Well, I think that it's a valid choice for us to make for ourselves, and anybody who wants to partake in such a meditation would be doing well to just let the entities know that we have another path that we're going to be following, and we see them as part of the Creator, and bless them on their way, but that we, you know, do not accept their offering. I think once said is enough. We don't need to make a ritual out of it. We don't need to pound them with our prayers. Just make the statement and then go on our way. That's all.
Okay.
I have about that.
All right, excellent. Thank you, Jim. That was very, very, very good information there. I'm going to go ahead and read the opening riff, which is now kind of the middle riff, and let everybody know you can call in live 646-595-2294, 646-595-2294. Be sure and hit the one key if you would like to join the show and ask your question live. Okay, I'm going to read from Kuo from November 21st, 2005, but it's highly relevant for today. We do not see at this time the probability of planetary destruction from nature. We do see the possibility of planetary destruction from the toxic nature of the human tribe. If those who have chosen to fear are allowed full sway, they may well bring about planetary destruction, as has happened with many of those entities now in power upon your planet, on other planets, and even on your own planet, to a certain extent. For those who are among your leaders at this time are often those who brought about the destruction of one of your continents, the continent of Atlantis. If these words resonate to you, my children, pay attention. This is the hour in which you can choose another way. In the face of fear, remember love. In the face of anger, remember compassion. In the face of disunity, remember union. For are you not part of everyone and everything that you meet? In the face of seeming dearth, lack, and limitation of resources, we ask you to dwell in thanksgiving and joy upon the unlimited possibilities that dwell within your imagination. We say to you this: for every problem that faces you this day, there is a solution. We have no way of knowing what you face and what you shall face, but we do know that your peoples have been given not only great challenges, but also great gifts and unlimited resources. The challenge that lies before you is not to husband dwindling resources, but to begin to see the resources that are available to you that are not now properly valued, and to realize that the greatest resource of all is the compassion that lies within your heart. It is hard sometimes to see how, in times of distress, the answers lie within you rather than outside of you, for all of the distress seems to be coming from outside of you. However, we say to you at this time that, in our opinion, that which shall heal you and your planet and bring you through the end of time to greet the dawning of a new day is that which lies within you, awaiting to be acknowledged. What is in your heart? What lies waiting within that mighty resource? Go into your own heart in humility, on bowed knees, with empty hands, and ask for help. It is waiting for that asking, and the help that comes will be instantaneous. As you ask, so shall help be present. Listen, then, when you have asked, for that still small voice, as this instrument would call the voice of spirit, to speak in the power of silence within you. And when you come from that room of prayer in silence and contemplation, may you sing with joy, and may you illuminate your world with thanksgiving, peace, and power.
Yeah, that beautiful statement. And I think it really says so eloquently what I was trying to say earlier about what we can do as individuals. I mean, when something like the shooting occurs, or we see multinational corporations taking over countries, or we see one tragedy or horrific situation occurring after another, as an individual, what can we do? We feel so powerless. But I think we can, within our own meditations, find that place of peace within ourselves where we communicate with the one Creator, who is everyone, who is everything. And there, we can begin to bring forth more of that energy in our own lives, whether we're doing a balancing exercise consciously to begin to balance these energies in ourselves, or simply working on opening our hearts so that when we see another person and interact with him or her, we're doing so more from an attitude of, what can I do for you? An attitude of love. This is a way that we can begin to change not only ourselves, but a little bit of the world around us. And if more people are doing that, eventually there's an effect, I think, that becomes, well, I guess they call it the 100th monkey effect, where all of a sudden a society or a culture is swayed. The needle of a compass is pointed in a direction, and then there's more of a traveling in a unified fashion in that direction. And I think these efforts of the meditation and contemplation and prayer are invaluable the more difficult times get. I remember from the movie about Gandhi's life, they were talking about how he would respond to his busy days. He always meditated in the morning, but on this one particular day, there were a lot of meetings, and it was going to be a long day, and he was going to have to make a lot of effort to talk to people and help them understand what those less fortunate needed. He was going to be an advocate. And so he said, well, it's going to be a long day, so I need to get up earlier and meditate longer. And that's the way he dealt with stress or a lot of work ahead of him. He meditated more. And I think that we can do the same thing in our own lives by focusing on that which we know is true and not focusing so much on the illusion that seems to be so real around us.
Okay, thank you, Jim. I'm going to go ahead and go to some of our questions, and I've got two. I'm going to go ahead and read them back to back because it's kind of on the same topic. And the first one is from Jules from the chat room a couple of weeks ago. Hi, Carla and Jim. What would be the best thing each of us can do to benefit the most of the December 21st, 2012 shift? Thank you. And from Nijuro, not sure how to say that. Dear Carla, Jim, and team at LL Research, first, both my wife and I would express our sincere gratitude for all the contribution you have made. A couple of questions we have. First, are you aware of the channeling of the cosmic awareness communications? Just curious what you or that of Kuo's thoughts are in regards to their message. The second question has to do with the coming harvest. As mentioned in previous channeled messages, that our planet will be striking the clock on December 12th, 2012. That was yesterday. Was it yesterday or day before yesterday, actually? Also mentioned in the recent cosmic awareness channels was the 9-day period between the 12th and the 21st, during which the harvesting process would be completed. From your understanding or through the information you have received, what in a physical sense would happen? How would the process take place, and how would that be perceived in a physical manner? I apologize if the question seems unimportant or overlaps with covered material, and again, thank you for any insights you may be able to provide us with.
Well, on the first question, what's the best thing each of us can do to benefit the most during the December 21st, 2012 shift? More particularly, in what I was thinking about, they're saying about meditation and so forth, the Mayan calendar speaks of a release of the feminine energy as being the rising of the kundalini from the base of the spine and moving that energy upwards so that we realize more love and light passing through our chakra system. So one specific thing that you can do in the meditation as you're meditating or as you're contemplating or praying, look at the chakra system within yourself. And if you have any ability to sense exactly how your chakras are doing, you know, if they're bright or dim or whatever, look at them and give some more energy and attention to each one in a balanced sense. For example, we look at the base chakras, one that we don't really do much work on. It's a basic survival, the sexual instinct, reproduction, and so forth. It's a kind of a given. We start there, so all of us are pretty much the same there, although you can block that energy, so it's good to look at it in the fashion of, well, is the energy flowing through clearly and cleanly there? Do I feel good about being alive as a human animal, and is the sexual energy exciting and moving me forward and inspiring and so forth? And then the orange being the individual relationship with other individuals. You can look at those relationships, you to your wife, you to your children, you to your boss, you to your neighbor, and so forth. It's how we react and respond to people on a one-to-one basis. And then the yellow ray, the groups of energies, my family, this family, my workplace, this workplace, my team, that team, however you want to group yourself. We work in groups in the third density particularly. And we can look at how we are able to do that, if we're doing it in a way that seems and feels to be helpful, or is there some shortcoming or some blockage somewhere that we could focus on. And then, of course, those three, the red, orange, yellow, being in somewhat of a balance, can allow us to move into the green ray of the open-hearted love and understanding, the compassion, and further into the blue ray of wisdom and inspiration, communication. And then the brow chakra, the indigo ray of being able to be enough in, be able to affect our own evolution enough that we can consciously change a situation by the way we look at it. All of a sudden we're in a relationship with a neighbor, maybe we're arguing, and finally it strikes us like a light switch going on that, you know, this isn't getting anywhere. I think I can do better. And all of a sudden you just, maybe you say, look, I'm sorry. I apologize for my part in this. Please forgive me. Let's see what we can do about changing this. You know, that's a mind blower. If somebody ever does that to you, I mean, it's so out of the realm of possibility for most people. But that's where magic happens. That's where the indigo ray asserts itself. So I think that's in particular what we can do as individuals. And we can do that as, you know, we can send those energies to the planet as well. The planet is a being that's also evolving. It's already moved into fourth density. It's trying to help take us along without, you know, all these energies of anger and war and hatred, which are embedded in the crust, and this heat. You know, Ra talked about this heat being released in the form of volcanoes and earthquakes and tidal waves and what we see as natural catastrophes. This is a very, actually, it doesn't seem so gentle to those people in the middle of it, but when you look at the entire planet, it's a much more gentle way of releasing these terribly destructive energies that we've taken thousands of years to put in the planet. So we can do this with the planet as well, help the planet to evolve and the population of the planet too. Now, as far as from the question from Najuro, yes, I'm most familiar with Cosmic Awareness Communications. I was on their mailing list for 5 years before I joined Don and Carla. And in fact, I turned down Don and Carla's first invitation to join them because I wanted to go out to Portland, Oregon, and Yamhill, Oregon, where the Cosmic Awareness School was, and that's what I did. I traveled out there in 1980 and hung out then with Paul Shockley was the one who was channeling Cosmic Awareness then, and in my opinion, I haven't read them all, but there have been at least five or six different people who have channeled Cosmic Awareness. Ralph Doobie began in 1961, channeling, and then Paul Shockley took over, I believe, in the late 60s, early 70s, and I think he was the longest channel for Cosmic Awareness, and I think he did some really wonderful work, and I thought that was just, you know, I mean, I wouldn't have gone out there to work with him. I didn't think they were doing really good work. And then I decided after having an opportunity of making a lot of money from a fellow who was part of the Aquarian Church of Universal Service, which was the church that was formed around Cosmic Awareness. He gave me a chance of making a bunch of money, and I thought, well, you know, I don't have anything against money, but I didn't come out here to do that. So I took the weekend off and meditated on what to do, and it took about 30 seconds for the message to come through to return to Louisville and join Don and Carla. So I ended up traveling 5,000 miles when actually I was just 70 miles away from them in the country. I think that they're, you know, there have been different types of questions asked to whomever was serving this channel for Cosmic Awareness over the years. And when you go down a certain line of questioning and you get off of the beam of how do we accelerate our evolution, how do we be of love and service to others, and start talking about things that are really unimportant on that journey, that won't be important 10,000 years from now, and if they're not important 10,000 years from now, why are we discussing them? I think there have been too many questions asked to other channels of that nature. And they've gotten some questionable information, and that would be the way I would look at the nine-day period between the 12th and the 21st as the harvest process would be completed. Well, I think for the harvest process to be complete, we're all going to have to die, and that's no big deal when you go into fourth density. You say, hey, great, let's go. If that's the doorway we go through, let's go through that doorway. So I don't think everybody's going to be dead in 1 week. I think we're going to go on for quite a while, you know, maybe 100 years, maybe more. It all depends on how we make choices over these next succeeding years. But I do want to say that I think that the work that they've done over the years has been magnificent. Vicky T., the faithful correspondent secretary, has not forgotten either my birthday or my wedding anniversary for the last 30 years. She sends me a card for both every year. And I know these people are totally desirous of being of help and service to others, But it's so easy to get off on a tangent in questioning and to find yourself in the woods and for the moment lost. But I have faith that they'll get back to the... I mean, they may have already. I mean, that's just my opinion on this particular question. I think they're doing good work.
Okay, and you addressed, I think, which is another major question that's on a lot of people's minds, because it's not just that particular channeled source, but lots of others as well. I mean, I was just kind of, I just was dabbling, reading a bunch of different stuff the other day, and I was like, oh my God, there's a lot of different opinions out there about what's going to happen over the next week. And, you know, some people saying we're all going to go poof, and some people saying we're going to be boarded onto spaceships, and then others are saying, you know, a lot of people are going to die, and other people are going to say we're all, you know, we're going to ascend, and then they go in, they actually go into all this detail about exactly how it's going to happen, which I thought was kind of curious that they would actually know all that. And then some others saying there's going to be 3 days of darkness. I mean, I think a lot of people are kind of freaked out right now. So do you have any advice on, I mean, just other than just staying focused and calm? I mean, do you think, you know, it's just, are we going to be here in a week? I mean, the Mayan calendar ends in the morning on Friday, the 21st. Are we going to have a show on Friday?
Yeah. Well, I would give the advice that I felt Ra gave me years ago when I was worried about one thing and another. And the advice was this: relax and enjoy. And it hasn't always been easy, but it's always been right on target. I don't think that there's going to be a whole lot of... I don't think that the next day is going to look physically any different than the day before. I've seen a lot of things that you've talked about, and it's just amazing. I think that people like gossip, really. It reminds me of Y2K, when, you know, all the things that were supposed to happen when the year 2000 came. Computers around the world were going to crash, power systems were going to go out, economies were going to crash, people were going to die, you know, and what happened? I don't remember anything happening. You know, maybe a computer here or there malfunctioned for a while until they got it recalibrated to a new millennium, I don't know. But not much happened, and I think the same thing's going to happen here. I just happened to Google a couple of days ago the Mayan prophecies, and I thought it was interesting what the current Mayans in Guatemala had to say about all this. And I'll read that paragraph here. It says, in regards to the ever-increasing attention on the December 21st, 2012 date, the living Maya of Guatemala urgently want it to be known that their ancient prophecies have been distorted and misportrayed as doomsday predictions. They do not advocate the fear and hysteria that is being generated by the sensationalized 2012 rumors. And they want people to be aware that most of the 2012 misinformation being put out is not sourced from them or their calendars whatsoever, even though it may appear to be associated with them. So these poor people that put out this information, you know, their ancestors thousands of years ago, are looking around thinking, how could this possibly happen with what our ancestors said? That wasn't anywhere close to what we were trying to say. So I think, you know, just relax, enjoy, and love.
Okay, I may have another follow-up question to that. But first, I'm going to go ahead and open the line. We've got a live caller. Hi, are you there?
Hi, yes.
Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Prem.
Prem, is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, well, thanks so much for calling in. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing very good, actually.
Okay, did you have some questions or comments?
Well, you know, what guidance would you give someone who's in the healing arts, you know, with so much changes going on?
Okay, as far as, like, what to focus on right now, is that what you mean? Or?
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm a healer, and I feel a lot of the changes, and kind of would like some guidance there.
Ra mentioned that the heart center, the Green Ray Energy Center, was the center that partakes most in the healing process. And I think with the feminine energy being so much more available now, especially to people who are seeking it, because it awaits that which reaches, and then our desire to seek it reaches towards it. And as we do that in our meditations, especially, that this energy becomes more available to us, and whatever we're doing can become enhanced by that. And especially if you're in the healing arts, using the heart center, that green ray center, that this energy can be brought up through the chakras, the red, orange, yellow, into the green, in such a way that can enhance the healing process. I think it's kind of like putting a magnifying glass on what you're doing. If you're consciously aware that this energy is available, and it's available on a planetary scale, and it's also available within each human being, then you can begin to tap this energy and enhance the healing process and bring more of a balance to the people that come to you asking for healing. Because I think that's really what healing does. It restores a balance that has been restored from what was out of balance. Out of balance then expressing itself as some sort of a disease or an ill health. So I think the energies of healing can be enhanced a great deal by tapping into this new feminine energy that's available.
Okay, yeah. Because I myself have done a lot of work trying to not be so judgmental on my feminine side, and I think that's probably why it's also kind of caused some misalignment in my body also, and so that was also why I asked that question. And it's interesting you were talking about the green ray of light. I've never used that.
Ra mentioned that in the healing, that whether it's on the self, the healer working to heal the self, or healing another person, that judgment has no part in the healing process. That you look at the person, whether it's yourself or another, to be healed, as being a portion of the Creator that seeks your service. And for whatever reason that portion seeks your service, it's really unimportant to you. The fact that it's seeking your service is all that is important. So you offer the healing energies on that basis. Again, as I say, whether it's to self or to another.
Okay. Wonderful.
Prim, while you're here with us, Jim, your question, Prim, brought up a question for me. Jim, since you mentioned the feminine energy is that which awaits, then how does a healer like Prem or anyone that's in the healing arts await? Do you think healers should await those who are seeking healing, or how do they offer their healing services without acting in a masculine way? Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, when a person is a healer and has been doing any type of healing at all, if they have any type of success, word of mouth is going to get around. And there are other ways. Whether you go to a workshop and offer healing energies or attempt to teach healing, or whether you're writing essays about it for the paper, however you're making yourself known to others, this through that way will come those who are seeking your healing. And I think it is important to wait to be asked to heal. To go and to try to heal somebody that hasn't asked for it usually isn't too successful, number one, and is really an infringement on their free will, because if they wish to be in that condition for whatever reason, that's their free will choice. Maybe they need to be there longer to learn what they've come to learn. We don't know. But if at some point they finally decide, I think I've learned what I've come to learn, or I want to know what I came to learn, and I like to balance this unbalanced situation, then they go in search of a healer. And those coincidences that bring us all together throughout our lives will bring those people to you. If you're really desirous of healing, your guides and their guides will bring you together, and then one thing and another, and you will get together.
Okay, did you have any follow-up questions?
That's actually very interesting what you just said, because I actually have a family member that I stay with who has, some issues with alcohol, and it's been an ongoing problem. And one day she, out of the blue, kind of said, I'm sick and tired of doing this, she decided to go lay down, but she was full of alcohol, and I could not make myself work on her. I felt like I was only allowed to do so much, which was just send us some light and some light work. So I find that a bit tricky, you know, especially when it comes to family members that's very close.
I think you really need to depend upon your intuition a great deal as a healer in whom you work on, what you do, how far you go. Intuition is really your guide here. It's a deeper portion of yourself from the subconscious that's working with these very powerful energies that, that are coming through from the subconscious and helping you to do your healing. So I think you really do need to pay attention to your intuition and what you feel is the right thing to do.
Okay. Well, thank you so very much.
Absolutely.
Well,
and Jim,
you
mentioned, before you go, Prim, you mentioned when people, not to try to heal someone unless they've asked, and I guess that wouldn't apply if they were in a coma or unconscious, right?
That was exactly it, because there was a lot of alcohol still in the body, and yet even though the question kind of sort of came out and said, well, I want you to stop this for me, and I was like, whoa, okay. I kind of looked upstairs and went, how do I do this? You know, I was kind of stumped, because how can I work on somebody when the thing I want, but at the same time they're full of a substance, you know.
Well, if a person is in a coma or in a drunken stupor or is in no way able to communicate with you consciously, you can offer the healing energies, but once again, pay attention to the intuition you have after you offer those energies. Pay attention to what you're being told, because it might very well be that their subconscious is communicating to yours to let you know either yes or no, more or less. So continue to pay attention to your intuition.
Okay.
Very good.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you so much for calling in, Prim.
That was very helpful. Thank you.
Feel free to call back anytime. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, I've got another caller. Hey, popular show tonight. Must be 2012. Hi, are you with us?
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Nijiro. I'm the person who submitted the question that you guys just addressed it.
Okay, great. Thanks for joining us.
We just have
about 5 minutes left, but feel free to comment or ask any follow-up questions.
Yeah, I'm just going to try and make this really quick. Not trying to dwell on the same topic that we just talked about, but as we were reading through the Quill's transcripts, because we've been going through them, we read that also from the Ra's material, that when the harvest comes, that there's a few scenarios, one of that being, you know, those who are harvestable would carry on with Earth to the fourth density. And then for those who will have to go through the same third density again will have to go to another planet to go through the third density work. Just the other day we came across another Quill's transcript saying that when this winter solstice comes, they don't see that there will be a... they don't see that the third density Earth would cease to exist. So is there a sort of contradiction between the two, or, you know, are we missing something in between there?
Me, I just want to say we're going to be live for about 7 more minutes, but we will continue to record. So don't try to rush. If we get cut off, anybody that's listening live, we will get cut off in 7 minutes, but it will continue to record, and you can catch the rest of it in the archive. Okay, go ahead.
Ross suggested that as the fourth density becomes fully established on planet Earth, the third density would temporarily be, I guess you'd say, in abeyance or be passive. And this is so that the new fourth density population would be able to learn the technique of shielding itself from being seen by third density entities. They wouldn't want to be seen by any new third density populations, because this would tend to infringe upon that third density population's free will. If they could see that there are miraculous beings living in a certain way, then there wouldn't be any choices for them to make as to how to live. They wouldn't have any power in their total being by having to make choices and to go through the learning process that really makes us stronger. So for a while, and we don't know exactly how long that would be, I mean in our time measurement, for a while the third density would no longer be active. But after a portion of time and experience where the new fourth density population masters the ability to become invisible to third density and to work as a unified social memory complex, after that point, then there would once again be a third density population on the planet, and planet Earth would be looked at as a third slash fourth density planet.
Okay. I guess also a bit of a follow-up on the previous question. I guess, you know, that's as good as our language would allow us to address some of these issues because they're all so conceptual. But in the original question, when I mentioned that how it would take place in the physical sense, what actually I wanted to ask was how would it take place, for example, you know, for a person graduating from third density going into fourth, would that be going through, let's say, you know, how they arrive in the fourth density? Would that be through like a birthing process that they got reborn as infants in the fourth density, but the difference being, you know, having the full memory of, you know, all the experiences and all that stuff? Would that be the case, or would that be would they just arrive, you know, on fourth density, you know, just in a different complex body, but, you know, not as an infant? And for those, let's say, you know, recycling, the third density experience, would they be reestablished as, you know, like the whole scenario that they experienced, would that be reestablished? Or would that be, let's say, a continuing of their previous experience, just sort of minus, you know, being modified and minus the ones that's ascended or, you know, that's graduated? Does that make sense?
Yes. For the entities that are going to have to repeat the cycle because they haven't been able to polarize enough in either direction, they will go to another third density planet that's just ready to start its 75,000-year major cycle or master cycle, made up of three 25,000-year major cycles. And they would go through the birth and death process again, beginning as life began on this planet with, you know, simple technology and simple understandings. However, it seems to be much more interesting for those who are going into fourth density in the positive sense especially. Ross said that the first thing that we do after we die is we go into our astral body, the body that's connected to the green ray, the heart chakra, and we discover that we're dead, and we begin to seek the next step. And part of that seeking process is to activate the indigo ray body, the etheric body, the form maker, Ra called it. And in that body, we begin to walk what Ra called were steps of light, that this light is kind of a measuring device. We walk into the light, and a lot of people who have gone through near-death experiences say, well, there was a tunnel and there was a light and so forth. Well, apparently there is a light and there are steps. And as we continue along those steps of light, at some point, the light becomes too glaring. It's more than we can handle. It just our systems just aren't able to handle it, and we step aside. And when we step aside, we are either in we're in fourth density somewhere. We're at some level of fourth density. All the densities have various levels to them. And whatever level we are in then, that's where we begin our experience. We begin it as a soul then, and at that point, I'm not exactly sure how the space-time and time-space portion of fourth density come into being. How there are, I know there are clans of entities that work together, and that the subconscious of every entity is available to every other entity. So everything everybody's ever learned is available to all. I mean, can you imagine just not only having access to all your experiences from all your incarnations, but having access to everybody else's experience from all their incarnations? What a massively intelligent, compassionate, incredible being you would be. And as a group then, as a social memory complex, then they begin to determine how they will pursue their paths of service. And it's always a continuing service to others, and they figure out how they're going to do it. So that's about all the information we got from Ra on how that process works. I'm sure there's much more to it, and it's all extremely fascinating and amazing and alluring.
Okay, quick question, because we're about to get cut off, and we will keep recording so you guys can listen to the archive later, but is that going to happen next week, Jim? Are we going to go through that next week, or are we going to still be here in 3D after next week?
Most of us are still going to be here. Those that die from whatever reasons that they die, from sickness, disease, car accidents, being shot by a rampaging murderer, all of those entities will go through that process I just described.
So I'm sorry to jump in, but that means that as entities, the harvest is not a massive event that just like here's the deadline, so here's the cutoff lines, people that make it makes it. It's not like that, but it's more that each person has their own sort of harvest moment, which is at the death. Is that what it means?
That's basically correct. If you look at the entire span of time and timelessness, all this is occurring within a few hundred of our years, which to us seems like a long time. But it's just an eye blink in eternity when you look at 75,000 years or 30 million years. Each person then that goes through this harvest and decides that it wishes to be of service, Ross said that usually what happens is that they decide they want to come back right here, right now, to planet Earth and continue helping others in this birthing process, to help others go through what they've just themselves been through. So that these are third/fourth density beings, and they're called by various names these days. The indigo children, I think, is the most popular one right now. Children beginning to express abilities that we see as being quite miraculous. Maybe they're telepathic. Maybe they mentally can bend things. Maybe they mentally can bend spoons. They get the Uri Geller effect. So a lot of these entities, in fact, just about all of them who do graduate now in the positive sense, are coming back to help Earth in its graduation. So eventually, everyone will graduate at once because they will have all been through it. There won't be enough left to not all do it together.
Okay, so thanks again for answering all the questions, and I don't want to waste your time, but we truly, truly appreciate what everybody at LL is doing. It's been very, very useful resources for us, and we hope, Carly, we feel better soon.
Thank you so much for your questions and your good wishes.
Okay,
thanks
thank
for
you.
Calling in.
Okay,
bye-bye. Okay, Jim, I think we went in all different directions on those questions, and hopefully people will be a little more reassured now. So just to really make that abundantly clear for everyone, so we're not necessarily, even though there is the striking of the hour, like you said, we are in that transition, and as far as you can tell, we're still going to be here next week, and even though we're still in 3D. Is that right?
Indeed, we will be here, and we will be talking to you about these same things once again next week.
Okay, so relax, everyone. And, I didn't read that entire transcript, but I want to invite everyone to pull it up at llresearch.org. It's the go to the transcript section. It's November 21st, 2005. Transcript from Kuo. It's highly relevant for right now. It's about what's happening right now. November 21st, 2005 at llresearch.org. Read the whole thing. It's very good. And at one point, Kuo says, "We would ask each who reads or hears our statements to pause at this time and release all fear." Keep reading past that, okay? Because they're talking about the end of time at the winter solstice 2012, which is next Friday. And they say to release all fear. And then they go on and explain what that means. It's end of time, not the end of existence. Okay? But we're going to probably delve into that some more next week. So please join us next week. Bring more questions if you like. I'm sure we're going to be focused on this 2012 solstice next week. But in the meantime, you might want to check out that transcript and the others as well at llresearch.org. You can also check out bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4th.org. We will be here next Friday. We will be here next Friday, December 21st, 2012, at 8 p.m. Eastern. Jim, any other quick comments you want to add? We're already past overdue anyway, but we're recording, so
I just
matter.
Want to thank everybody for their questions. It's a real pleasure and privilege to be able to address them. And we always hope
okay. And you did a fabulous job. Carla left some really big boots to fill tonight, and you did a great job. So thank you for filling in for Carla, and I sure hope she feels better and hopefully will be back with us next week. So that's it for tonight, and we will be here next Friday. See you then.
Cheerio.